Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're pleased that you've chosen to download this third podcast dedicated to what SUEZ is seeing in the COVID-19 crisis. The format is the same for the two others. Matilda and I will respond to 7 frequently asked questions, and they reflect the discussions we've had with our shareholders, our investors and analysts over the last few weeks, and in particular this last week when we've done some virtual roadshows. Before starting, let me remind you the rationale for this series. We receive many questions and we want to consolidate the answers so that all of us stakeholders can access them in this busy period. It enables us to comment on those questions in a unified way. We also seek where possible to give useful information as to how the current scenario is evolving for our industry overall. In general, although we'll be giving information which is already public or available, it is hopefully in a form which is easier for you to use. And we've used this format regularly to try to maintain contact with all of our investors and analysts over this period. We've done this in the spirit of openness and communication in these complicated times, and that reflects the way we've tried to put SUEZ in context throughout this period. But I would stress again that we will not give material price-sensitive information. That if and when we have it, we would, of course, give in the usual way. So please bear that in mind as you listen to the questions and the answers. We encourage you not to try to model our business based on the answers we give here. And there's nothing in what we will say that should be taken as guidance in any way. There's one difference about this podcast to numbers 1 and number 2. Which is that Matilda and I are actually in the office together. We have been gradually reopening the headquarters here in Paris over the last few weeks, and we intend to continue that over the next few weeks. The rest of the employees of the group, in particular the 86-odd percent around the company who are not based around offices, have continued to work. And again, I think one of the things we'd like to do as we start is to thank and pay tribute to all of the SUEZ employees who've kept our vital services going during this period. With that, I hand over to Mathilde.
Okay, so let's move to questions. So Julian, can you tell us how things have been evolving in the business in the recent weeks? What are the latest trends and how or European activity reacting in the post-containment phase?
So the past few weeks since we last were with you have confirmed the trends that we've expected to see. The end of March and the beginning of April was the low point in activity in Europe. And whilst there's still volatility from one week to the next, and the pace and magnitude of improvement differ between countries, we have seen improvement in most of our European countries and businesses. In addition, we continue to see steady progress, for example, in Asia. In North America and in Chile, for example, South America, as you can see elsewhere, it is now that you're beginning to see the bigger impacts of COVID around confinement. But if we come back to Europe and start in waste, we see in our European business a clear pickup in volumes in commercial and industrial activity, with one exception, which is the UK, where activity is still down significantly versus last year. Earlier this year, France was clearly the most impacted country, but C&I volumes have progressively been recovering since mid-April, and they were even back to 2019 levels over the last 10 days or so. We would be cautious about that as it probably includes some catch-up effects, but overall that's a good sign. Germany and the Netherlands continue to be stable markets and to resist quite well. If I turn to water in Europe, we're seeing a more limited impact in France, with the volumes maybe down now 3 to 4% compared to maybe 5 to 6% earlier compared to 2019 levels. Spain is still relatively stable, with the impacts reflecting the limited tourist activity in the country at the moment. And as I mentioned, do keep in mind that for some of our business, we're seeing impacts starting around confinement now. That's the case, for example, for Chile and Latin America. For WTS, we've expressed our views on the outlook for WTS in other podcasts, but for the moment, it continues to be a resilient business. Tilda, turn it over to you. Last October, we announced a performance plan that would generate €1 billion of gross annual savings by 2023. How has that been changed by the crisis?
So the performance plan announced as part of Shipping Suez 2030 called out €1 billion gross efficiency by 2023, of which €450 to €500 million in the first 2 years. It is a key element of our strategic plan, and the teams remain very focused on its execution, even during the most difficult moment of the crisis. The work is progressing and delivering well versus what was planned for 2020, and this crisis is giving us an opportunity to accelerate in some aspects. Like, for example, on travel costs, historically, it is about €140 to €150 million a year, and only around two-thirds of it for commercial purpose. Right now, we are running at approximately 2% of that. We knew already that there was some room for optimization here, but that's an opportunity to move forward faster and make sure that travel costs don't get back to where they were. Now, in front of COVID-19, we've been reactive on implementing additional cost savings, notably through increasing the proportion of variable costs to reach 50 to 55% of total cost in some businesses versus historically 30 to 40%. For example, on truck lease, for the first time, we tested the actual possibility to return trucks to the leasing when they are not needed. Part of this increased variability will remain as we exit the crisis. Facing an unprecedented situation, our teams have worked differently and discovered new and very efficient ways of working they will keep as we restart. For example, only 15 to 20% of waste collection is subcontract in France versus 50% in Netherlands. There are probably some room for improvement here. Back to you, Julian. Are you seeing any change in pricing trends for the waste business? Any downward pressure?
So in Europe, for waste, price discussions with our customers occurred in January and February, and that's standard across the industry. And as for 2019, they resulted in increases in line with what we had expected at the beginning of the year, including in our communication with you. For the moment, we do not see price pressure at the current time. We have to acknowledge it's a risk and it may or may not materialize in the future, but it's not a reality for the moment. In an environment like the one we're facing now, pricing is above all a question of dialogue with our customers. Along the crisis, we've proved our resilience, maintained the quality and the reliability of our essential services, and have kept close contact with our customers, whether they're industrial or municipal or commercial clients. In the current context, we can demonstrate to our customers the true cost of our treatment and our work and the true value added of what we do and how those costs should be recovered in pricing. When I look at the last 2 years, it's not been so much the volumes which has driven pricing as the saturation of the assets on the one hand, and also the changes in regulations and some increases in input costs or other costs, and such things as the weakness of commodity prices. We've also been steadily changing our business model to be less volume dependent. So we need to keep vigilant, but so far, prices are a risk, not a reality. So back to you, Mathilde. What about your exposure to commodity prices, and how should we think about the impact from those elements?
So, paper prices have been up recently, notably driven by some squeezes. Today, paper industry need recycled paper, so demand is still okay. We've seen the same trend for plastics, and notably high-quality plastics, helped by regulations that uncouple recycled prices from virgin material ones. The sustainability of these trends still needs to be confirmed. Electricity is low, but it doesn't affect us that much as it is hedged. Low diesel prices is a positive, but is not compensating for the rest. So commodities have been a headwind in the last quarter of 2019 and in Q1 2020, and we continue to expect they remain so. Now, Julian, do you face an impact from unpaid bills on your working capital or P&L? And how is your current situation in terms of liquidity?
So this is a good question. And similar to price, we have to acknowledge that it's a risk and it may or may not materialize in the future. And it's one of those one-time risks that we continue to follow closely as a potential impact from the pandemic. It also implies considering the wide variety of situations that we face in different countries. So if I take water first, during periods such as this pandemic, as a matter of policy as a company, we do not interrupt or disconnect water supplies to our customers at all. And that, of course, raises the risk of not being able to collect bills as they come due. This is different depending on whether the customers would normally pay, for example, physically, or whether they would pay by direct debit. Now, in France, for example, we've seen no major payment delays so far in, for example, residential services. If you look at North Africa, we have seen delays because people pay many of their bills physically in our offices or through home collection. And of course, those activities have been stopped during confinement. In waste, if I turn to I&C customers, we need to monitor closely the situation, as of course, there's a risk of some of our clients who might or may not be paying late finding themselves in a situation of financial difficulty later. And that's something that we continue to monitor both in terms of taking on new contracts and new clients, as well as focusing on our existing ones. So overall, it's a risk. It would be a one-time risk, but it's a risk, and we have to keep following that. Turning to the second part of the question around liquidity and cash flow, we look at the work we've done since March and feel that we've preemptively refinanced and boosted our liquidity very significantly. In refinancing, we've executed 2 billion euros of long-term debt issuance since March 26th in the public markets with maturities of 7 and 15 years and coupons of 1.25%, and in private markets with maturities of 8 and 12 years. I can focus for a moment on shorter-term debt. Since the beginning of the confinement, we've repaid 630 million euros of commercial paper, but we've issued just over a billion, two-thirds of which matures now in 2021. So we've been able to anticipate and refinance early much of the redemption of commercial paper that we have between now and the end of the year. I would also note that our liquidity and cash position does not rely on commercial paper to a significant extent. It represents less than 10% of the total gross debt of the group. Last but not least, we exercised the call option on our remaining 148 million euros of hybrid bonds due in 2020. This redemption was early refinanced, in fact, last year for a liability management exercise in September 2019. And we have no more long-term debt redemptions until May 2021. So all in all, we feel we've done what we need to do to pre-finance and to boost the liquidity of the group. So I'll turn back to you, Mathilde. There's been a lot of talk recently about the European Green Deal. Could you give us your view on the potential evolution in regulation here? And are there areas where you could see SUEZ benefit and deploy capital?
We strongly believe that the environmental emergency remains a priority, and we support green recovery plan. we see a real opportunity for that to drive around critical infrastructure investment, and particularly around the water business or around circular economy. A lot of discussions around the Green Deal initially focused on renewable energy, but we are actively advocating to widen the discussion towards investment for ecological transition. It is too early to say if anything tangible, but that is where our focus is at the moment. More generally, we're discussing with various governments and with the European Commission to push regulation towards more focus on environment. On initiatives to accelerate circular economy, for example. Instead of squeezing landfills, what matters is the regulation that drives demand for recycled materials and emergence of a market driven by its own offer-demand dynamics. We think this should materialize in the coming years, and we're quite positive about the outlook as companies and industries are also clearly more focused on accelerating their transition and improving their ESG scoring. This is also pushed by all their stakeholders. And last question for you, Julian. Some rumors appeared in the press recently about asset disposal processes that would be well advanced, like Sweden. When will you update us on the evolution of your asset rotation plan?
So thank you for raising that. So I'm afraid we will keep being somewhat stubborn when it comes to answering this question. We will continue not to provide or comment on names of potential disposals until we're ready to do so. And we won't comment on rumors that appear in the press. Now, having said that, regarding the evolution of the asset rotation plan, I would repeat that everything we wanted to kick off this year is going forward, whether in vendor due diligence or an initial approach or during offer phases. We've been able to work around the impacts of the pandemic, for example, on logistics issues of doing M&A, the technical difficulties with conducting due diligence or site visits, and we feel we found good ways through those. And overall, the interest of potential partners, whether strategics or whether funds, to buy the solid assets that we have to sell hasn't changed over the past few months. And that encourages us we will be able to continue, as we'd hoped, for the balance of the year. We'll keep you informed as soon as we can. And in the meantime, we will continue to be somewhat stubborn. Thank you for that, Mathilde.
So thank you for downloading this. We hope it is useful. I remind you again to be attentive to the introduction and the cautionary comments we made at the outset. And as always, we remain at your disposal for any additional questions.
So from both of us, thank you very much. And we hope to see you again soon. In the meantime, keep safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.